Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Many of the outdoor spaces, parks, and recreation areas in Pennsylvania that we enjoy have been improved and maintained using money from the Land and Water Conservation Fund. The fund was established by the federal government 55 years ago using money from offshore oil and gas drilling. It expired last September. However, Congress has since given their approval to renewing the fund, but it awaits President Trump's signature. So what does the fund do here in Pennsylvania, and what are some of the needs here in Pennsylvania? Joining us on this portion of the program is Cindy Adams Dunn, Secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Conservation and Natural Resources. Secretary Dunn, welcome back to the program.
Great to be here, Scott.
Also joining us today is Lauren Imgrund, who is Deputy Secretary of Conservation and Technical Services with DCNR. Deputy Secretary Imgrund, welcome to the show as well.
Thanks. Great to be here.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Secretary Dunn, let me start with you. Why is the Land and Water Conservation Fund important to Pennsylvania, not just Pennsylvania, but all 50 states?
Well, it funds a lot of our local parks and recreation. As you know, we have a myriad of funds to piece together to bring local recreation to our residents in Pennsylvania. And at DCNR, we implement a program of grants to local communities for things like swimming pools, trails, parks. And that's part of the important matrix of funding that we use. The other side of the fund, the federal side, funds the many federal facilities we have in Pennsylvania. And I know, you know, when you think of national parks, people often think about, you know, Yellowstone or Yosemite, but we have the Appalachian Trail here in Pennsylvania. We have Flight 93. We have a myriad of other important sites, you know, Hopewell Furnace. So it funds the federal side, too. But the part of it that DCNR was involved with, and in fact, Lauren Imgrund led the state liaison officers. There's a person from every state that really gets in there and fights and works for the state side fund. And Lauren led that effort as the president of NSERLO across the country. So she's coming off of a couple years effort to get that fund renewed. And it's been quite a victory to see this bipartisan support for its renewal. And now, like you said, it's awaiting for the president's signature.
Deputy Secretary Imgrund, this would seem like a no-brainer, though. I was a little surprised that it took as long as it did. It expired in September, but as I mentioned in the introduction, this is not taxpayer money. This is not coming out of the taxpayers' pockets. This is coming from offshore oil and gas drilling, money that is derived from that. So why did it take so long?
Well, I think it's a program that has great bipartisan support.
It does. I mean, the vote in Congress was overwhelming.
Right. And really, when we go down and talk to the Congress members, it's always a really easy thing to talk about because it is so broadly supported. But Congress wanted to do the renewal as part of a larger public land package. And they worked and did some compromises on that over the fall, last fall, to really direct public lands policy across the nation and really work in a bipartisan manner to come up with this larger bill that the Land and Water Conservation Fund reauthorization was part of. And I think it took a while because of the back and forth of deciding what things were going to be in that big public lands bill, what pieces that different Congress persons would support. And so I think that was part of the delay. And then at the end of the last session, it was ready to be voted on, and then one senator had blocked the bill under the Senate rules, and so then they promised that they would bring it back up as one of the very first things in the next Congress, which they did do, and as you mentioned, it passed with really great bipartisan majorities both in the Senate and in the House.
And I think our audience probably is more interested in what the money actually goes for and the projects and that kind of thing. But I do want to get the politics part of it out of the way right up front. I mean, this was never in any danger, was it, that it wouldn't be renewed? And the second part of that question, is there any question that President Trump will approve it?
I don't think it was ever in any danger of not being renewed. I think it was just the timing. And of course, there was a great push by a lot of conservation groups here in Pennsylvania and across the country, the Nature Conservancy, Pennsylvania Environmental Council, Appalachian Mountain Club here in Pennsylvania, and many others working to get it. So it was really important that all that grassroots support brought it to the congressional attention. You know, I wouldn't expect any issues with the president signing the bill. As I mentioned, it did pass with really strong bipartisan support. And there's a lot of different items throughout that public lands bill that please many of the of people in Congress. So I wouldn't expect it to be a problem. I'm confident that it will be signed and put into law.
This seems like a win-win, no-brainer kind of thing, every kind of cliche that you can come up with. I mean, it has to do with people, Americans, outdoor activities, recreational activities. Again, money not coming from the taxpayers' pockets. So it is a win-win all the way around. Secretary Dunn, let's go back to what the money is used for. You mentioned some of the locations. Before I get into that, and I don't want to get too far into the weeds, but I want to make sure that we understand the relationship. This is a federal fund.
Right.
How it is applied in Pennsylvania and by the states.
Good. That's a good point. I did want to add something else that was in the bill. The Susquehanna Heritage Area got a federal designation. Well, that's huge.
Which is huge. That's we've been talking about that the last few weeks.
Right.
Columbia, Wrightsville, Lower Susquehanna Valley, the heritage area.
And that's been a long time coming. So that's a fantastic victory that we feel very comfortable with. You know, our governor, Governor Wolf, had to, you know, advocate for it, as did governors from other states. The myriad of conservation groups, you know, Penn Environment, Penn Future, National Wildlife Federation, Nature Conservancy. It was a big push for everyone. Of course, permanent reauthorization and that designated split was very important to everybody.
Can I stop you for just 1 second? You said permanent reauthorization.
Correct.
And so this will not come up for reauthorization again? This is permanent?
Correct. And that was a big the state liaison officers like Lauren really pushed that as something new and different. So we're not fighting this battle and not having to fight for this most logical, well-loved program. So that was a huge victory as well. And so, but anyway, as you ask, so we implemented along with a myriad other funding streams. Interestingly, our Keystone Fund might have been modeled after, I mean, the LWCF may have been modeled after our Keystone Fund, our oil and gas lease fund, which is, you know, resources extracted from the ground go into conservation. And in front of us today, Governor Wolf's proposed Restore Pennsylvania from a severance tax, very, very similar model. So a severance tax, you know, on gas, you know, on gas withdrawals would be paid for by the users of the gas, which interestingly are 80% from outside of Pennsylvania, would go into a fund called Restore Pennsylvania, which would add to the funding for parks and infrastructure, green infrastructure, flood reduction, et cetera. So we have something in front of us stateside that's as important in this myriad of funding we need to support recreation, conservation, local parks and trails like your beloved Enola Low Grade. All these things cost money. The beauty is it's like a triple win. You know, extraction from the ground goes into conservation funding, goes into building a local economy, quality of life, and then pays back to the general fund in tax revenues that are gained from active recreation and tourism. So it's really a win.
And then Secretary, now you just made your case for an extraction fund, a severance tax.
Absolutely.
But we know politically, and I didn't want to get into too much politics, but know politically that that is going to be difficult, as it has been in the past here in Pennsylvania.
What I'm hoping is that, you know, like the reason that this, tying back to LWCF, the reason it got such good bipartisan support is all those congresspeople could see the benefit in their local districts. So Restore Pennsylvania, if you look at the governor's program, it's got broadband, it's got flood damage remediation, it's got removing blight, and it's got green infrastructure like our parks and forest infrastructure and our trail gaps. So, you know, elected official can see their district's needs being met by Restore Pennsylvania. And that's why we're very hopeful and optimistic.
But the other side, the reason it hasn't been approved so far is they say that we have an extraction. We have a fee already, an impact fee, and that it could cost jobs. Don't want to really get into that so far, but we can talk about some funding issues. Let's take a call from Jim in Enola. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Scott. This is a great topic, and because I agree so much with what Cindy and Lauren have to say, I'm not going to repeat what they have to say, but I'm going to be slightly more political than they've been. The Land and Water Conservation Fund, it funds all kinds of conservation work, and I don't care if you're a hunter, a fisherman, a birder, a hiker, a mountain biker, or if you just love the outdoors, you ought to support the Land and Water Conservation Fund. This has not been a political issue until this administration has made it a political issue. And, you know, because everything is transactional with this president, he doesn't want to support stuff that's not in the public good. People need to contact the administration and tell them this is a voting issue because it is good for every aspect of the outdoors. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. And I don't know whether you want to comment on that or not, but, you know, as he had said, Lauren, that this has not been a political issue in the past. It doesn't sound like you think it will be this year either, when you consider the amount of bipartisan support it has gotten.
I don't, because, for example, there's often congressmen and women in the western states that might not be in favor of additional federal land acquisition. But some of those folks are very much in favor of the part of the Land and Water Conservation Fund that goes to local communities. And in Pennsylvania, we will get about $6.5 to $7 million for local community projects that will help rebuild ball fields, will build swimming pools, will establish new parks. We're working on a project in South Middleton Township that's going to add some
new— Cumberland County?
Yes, in Cumberland County. Add some new active ball fields there. That'll be underway here very soon. So it really, as I mentioned before, the law has a little bit of something for everybody. It helps to support those local community projects. And the money, the 40% that is guaranteed in the fund that goes to the states, is distributed through a formula. So
I was wondering how Pennsylvania was decided, how much we get.
So it's based on population, and it's also based on need, which has to do with economic factors that the Park Service takes into account, income factors, I believe. And so, you know, various states get a certain amount of money through formula. The great thing about this permanent reauthorization is that we have the security now to know that we're going to be getting money year in and year out. And that helps both DCNR and our communities plan projects because they know that the funds will be there to help move some of these big projects forward.
How much does Pennsylvania, or have we gotten in the past?
So it's really been one of the big things that we've been working on with the NASORLA, the National Association of State Outdoor Recreation Liaison Officers, is to increase the share of funds that go to states. When the program was originally established back in 1965, 60% of the money was guaranteed for state outdoor recreation. Sometime in the 80s, I think it was, that percentage was removed. And we had gotten to as low as 11% of the total funding. So we were getting like nationwide $40 million, which is really not enough money to run a program. So working in concert with National Recreation and Parks Association, National Governors Association, and a number of other organizations, we've been working to get that percentage increased. And through the regular appropriations process, we've been able to do that last year, and then in this year's budget that just passed a little while ago, we're going to get about 38% of the funds. But the great thing about the law that just passed is it's going to guarantee 40% of the money to the states. And for Pennsylvania, that's going to look at about $6.5 to $7 million a year, I believe.
And I have seen that Pennsylvania has received more than $309 million since the fund was enacted 55 years ago. We're going to talk more about the Land and Conservation Fund and Land and Water Conservation Fund here in just a moment. Our guest today, Secretary Cindy Dunn of the Department of Conservation Natural Resources, Lauren Imgrund, who is Deputy Secretary of Conservation Technical Services. We'll be back with more right after this. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. Coming up a little later this week and next week, actually later in March here on WITF Smart Talk, some of the programs that we're looking at here in the future. In fact, next week, PBS's Judy Woodruff will be with us. Charter Day here in Pennsylvania coming up this weekend, and tomorrow we're going to talk with the author of a biography of Pennsylvania founder William Penn. I'm reading the book, and I have to tell you that there is so much I have learned about William Penn, not exactly what we were taught in school, or at least there was a lot of parts missing. So William Penn, much more interesting than the pictures you've seen and probably what you've heard. So that's coming up tomorrow. Also, how the media covered the Three Mile Island accident. We invite you to share your questions in advance by sending us a voice memo or leaving voicemail. See what's coming up at WITF.org/smarttalk. Today, we're talking about the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which was just renewed by Congress within the last few weeks. It still awaits President Trump's signature. It's money that comes from oil, offshore oil and gas drilling. No money coming out of taxpayers' pockets. Goes for recreational, outdoor activities, projects across Pennsylvania, across the country. Our guest today, Cindy Adams Dunn, Secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, Lauren Imgren, who is Deputy Secretary of Conservation and Technical Services with DCNR. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Secretary Dunn, before we go to the telephone, many people are probably wondering how it's decided what this money will be used for. It's money coming from the federal government, as you said, about $6 million for Pennsylvania. How is it decided here in Pennsylvania what the money will be spent on?
Well, we put it into our competitive grants program. We call it the Community Conservation Partnership Program. We blend it with funds from the Keystone Fund. Again, the Keystone Fund's really transfer tax, Environmental Stewardship Fund, from tipping fees, and Oil and Gas Lease Fund and other sources of funds. We put it out there in a competitive grant round, which is incidentally open right now until mid-April. And then we have professionals ranking and grading the proposals for their value, their completeness, their serving the public. We really try to get projects in every zip code in Pennsylvania. We try to serve all the communities. And then our grants are then announced in the fall. The communities are matching that funds with local funds, so that it's a matching program, and then we can move the projects. Now, the sad thing is we say no to about half the grant applications we get. They're ready to go, wonderful projects. The money, even with Land and Water Conservation Fund, the Keystone Fund, even with all these funds, we're meeting about half the need any given year. So it's a huge demand for conservation and recreation across Pennsylvania. We are a conservation state, a recreation state. And it's funny, you mentioned William Penn. And when you read the book, maybe you can tell me this is true. William Penn apparently said, for every 5 acres, one needs to be conserved and wooded or forested. But we do have this outdoor ethic. We're fifth in the nation. Outdoor Recreation Association named us fifth in the nation. It generates a lot of economy, but it speaks to our history of, hunting, fishing, hiking, local recreation, our local parks. And these are the parks that, people can walk to after work, or get in a car and go go play a ball game. So this whole matrix of recreation is critical in Pennsylvania. And it's really great that we have funding streams that feed into this competitive grant program. It's very popular.
I mentioned this because just kind of a tease for part of tomorrow's program, but also because I know that our audience is very interested in history. But just what you said is absolutely true. William Penn lived through the Great Fire in London. And one of the reasons that fire spread so quickly and caused so much damage was because homes and lots were so close together that when Philadelphia was laid out, he wanted it that there would be more yards, more trees, more green, and that the homes and the buildings would not be so close together, so there wouldn't be the danger. People could enjoy the outdoors, and there wouldn't be the danger of a fire destroying the whole city. Now, it didn't exactly work out that way in Philadelphia, but that was a big part of what he... See, so we're teasing. We're doing two different programs here, Secretary.
Good.
We're teasing for tomorrow,
good,
talking history. We're doing a lot here.
Good.
Let's take a phone call from David in Carlisle. David, you're on the air.
Good morning. I have a question for your guests. As someone who enjoys Pennsylvania's public lands and the extensive trail system in our state, I would like to ask them, is DCNR working on improving the trails in the state?
Absolutely. We can share that answer. I'll say something, and then Lauren also will have a lot to say about that. So we are... Yeah, I'd like to say we're first in trails, but, you know, I'm a little competitive maybe. But, you know, maybe Michigan, you know, beats us on trail miles because they count forestry roads. But in terms of, like, rail trails and hiking trails, we're number one. In fact, when I leave here, we're going to our Trail Advisory Committee meeting. We have, you know, volunteers from across the state that are helping generate this trail movement. If you ask the public in surveys, as we do with our outdoor recreation, program, what they want. People, trails come up really high, and it's top on your list too, I know.
Mm-hmm.
And everything from the wilderness hiking trails, which actually do take work and maintenance. We depend on a legion of volunteers and organized volunteers to maintain and improve them. We have the rail trails, which are very family friendly and sometimes even transportation oriented. You know, people commute on them, and they're very expensive. Linola low grade, your favorite, is a very expensive one because we have to replace and fix a bunch of expensive bridges and then, you know, improve the grade. So that one is definitely like a Restore Pennsylvania project because it needs that kind of care. But it's a big family of maintainers and volunteers, advocates and funders, and we get a lot of requests. Lauren, how much is a grant request for trails?
I think it's usually around $12 million because we usually fund about $6 million worth of trail projects. We also work extensively with the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation because they have funding for trails, and they're able to help with some of these big infrastructure projects that the Secretary was talking about.
David, let me turn back to you. What kind of improvements would you like to see?
Well, I think that in some instances, maintenance is an issue, although there's many legs to the stool that support these trails, that sometimes there's not the funds available. So I would like to see them funded better.
Okay. Thank you very much for your call. I have a personal request. Some places to put when I clean up after my dog so I don't have to walk the whole trail with a bag in my hand. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do know exactly what you're talking about. And thank you for cleaning up after your dog.
Don't worry. I wouldn't do that where I'd let that out in the, out on the trail for other people to walk through. But,
but that is important. And the amenities and the support system for trails. And 2018 was a tough year. I mean, it was wet. We saw damage to trails. To repair and replace and just upgrade and restore a lot of our existing trails is a demand. In our own state park and forest infrastructure, like in our state parks and forests, we have a lot of trails embedded in the public lands. And we've had washouts and bridges. And so our infrastructure needs are $1 billion across the state.
Now, is that just for trails?
No, that's for
everything.
That's for everything.
Okay, I'm going to talk about some of those needs. But,
but trails are part of that. And this was 2018 was a bad year. We're having to go back and replace forestry roads and fix trails. We're leaning again on our legion of volunteers to, rebuild, restore, try to dry up these trails, create drainage and such. But it is a demanding year, but, we're getting back out there and trying to fix them up.
I'm curious about this, and, pardon me if I'm asking odd questions, but these things pop into my head, and I know that other listeners have the same thing. What are more popular, trails that are paved, trails that are unpaved?
I think it...
Did I stump you with that one?
I'm not sure we know for sure the answer to that question because we don't have counts on every trail. But what we think and what we're trying to do in Pennsylvania is to establish and continue to maintain a variety of trails that meet the different needs that people have. So I live near the Appalachian Trail and in an area that's actually relatively flat across the Cumberland Valley. So it's a great place for people to start out hiking, and you see a lot of little kids there on that flat section of trail. But a lot of people would maybe even consider that a wilderness trail if they haven't been to some other parts of the Appalachian Trail. But then we also have, again, I'm kind of speaking from local experience here, but the Cumberland Valley Rail Trail, which is in many parts of it is paved and is an easy biking trail for folks. Again, gets lots of visitors. So I'm not sure we know what the most popular is. In our outdoor recreation plan that we do every 5 years, which is actually a requirement of the Land and Water Conservation Fund, walking and hiking continually is one of the most popular, is the most popular recreational activity. So it's important to have a whole bunch of different types of trails to meet everybody's needs.
Is it more expensive to maintain a paved trail, though, than one that's unpaved? Reason I ask that, because I can see it both ways. Just what Secretary Dunn described with the amount of rain we had last year. I've been on trails where erosion has been a problem. A bridge has been washed out. But obviously, to pave a trail probably costs more money than one that's unpaved.
Absolutely does cost a lot of money. But the paved trails and those larger sort of rail trails have a lot of drainage features built in, so the money that's spent up front probably results in less maintenance over time because they're really built. First of all, the railroads were built phenomenally, and we're building on top of those, and they're really built kind of like mini roads. So a lot of expense up front, but the maintenance isn't quite as high over time. But again, as your caller mentioned before, trail maintenance is really critical. A hiking trail through the woods, you might just think you cut a path, but actually you have to look at drainage and do good design there as well. But certainly the large paved trails are more expensive to build.
So there's some science that goes into it.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
I'll mention, though, just one thing, Scott. The Mid-State Trail, it's a trail of the year this year, 2019 Trail of the Year. It's a wilderness trail. And it was a volunteer-built and maintained trail. So this legion of volunteers that go in and manage the drainage and do the volunteer work. So technically, is it expensive? Maybe not so much, except for some places where there are crossings and bridges. But in terms of sweat equity, that volunteer service is critical.
Secretary Dunn, you mentioned $1 billion worth of needs. That's one of the things I wanted to talk about in the program. What kind of needs is Pennsylvania are we looking at right now?
So when people think of our public, our state-owned public lands, there's state parks and forests under DCNR's management, and they don't think of us as being a building agency, but we actually have 4,700 buildings, everything from visitor centers to restrooms to picnic pavilions. And like any infrastructure, it degrades over time. So it is, a lot of these were built in the 50s, 70s, 80s, and they need new roofs. They need new HVAC systems. We're trying to make them all much more energy efficient. We've done a guaranteed energy savings analysis of our buildings. So when we do replace things, that will they'll be much more energy efficient and cost us less money every year. But we have $1 billion worth of needs identified. This includes like the natural resources side and the state forest land that we've acquired. We have 2.2 million acres we're managing for the citizens of Pennsylvania. In that matrix are 35,000 acres of abandoned mine land affected lands. These need to be restored. The water systems need to be improved. And we need to reforest a lot of that. So, it's interesting. This whole concept of land and water is very related. So what we do on the land and how we take care of the land has direct impact on water. So in our matrix of needs there, we're trying to improve water, just like our original mission, the Department of Forests and Waters. We're taking care of the forest to take care of the waters.
And we're going to be talking about preserving the forest here in just a few moments in the second part of our program, or third part of our program. From what you're describing, this money from the Land and Water Conservation Fund and other state funding or state funding is going more toward maintenance than it is for creating new places, right?
Absolutely. We're not – yeah, exactly. We're not proposing new facilities except for maybe occasional places that are needed, like trailhead opportunities and visitor centers, a few places. But we're really looking at taking this system and restoring it. That's why the term Restore Pennsylvania and our work in green infrastructure with our parks is critical, and it's an important part of it. That's why I'm out really stumping for Restore Pennsylvania, because I see this infusion of money right now is essential to really keep our system vibrant. And one of the things that Governor Wolf keeps talking about is, we've got to keep young people in Pennsylvania. If you look at our demographic, if people my age, the baby boomers, are heading toward going into retirement, we need a young, vibrant workforce in Pennsylvania. And if you talk to young people about where they're choosing to live, a lot of people choose the place they want to live based on quality of life. And quality of life are things like trails, parks, forests, wilderness. And they can do their work through the internet from where they are. So we need to attract and maintain vibrant natural infrastructure to retain and attract Pennsylvanians. We have got a lot of colleges and universities in Pennsylvania. If we could just even keep a percentage of those young people in the state for their final work life, that would just be huge to our future economy. So people like me, as we retire, we need that workforce behind us.
Mm. And it is an economic builder as well. I mean, it does provides jobs. The outdoors provides jobs. A lot of these things that we're talking about, and contributes to our economy. Secretary Cindy Dunn and Lauren Ingram, Deputy Secretary DCNR, thank both of you for being with us today. Secretary Dunn, you're going to stick around with us. But Deputy Secretary, thank you very much for being with us today. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Listen tomorrow for Smart Talk. We discuss Pennsylvania founder William Penn, Charter Day in Pennsylvania coming up this Sunday. A lot you didn't know about William Penn, a lot more interesting than what you probably do know. That's coming up on tomorrow's program. You can visit our website to get an outlook of conversations that we're working on. Plus, you can leave a voicemail or voice memo question for one of our upcoming programs. More information is at WITF.org/smarttalk. Around the country, states like Pennsylvania are losing healthy, mature forest to development, pest, catastrophic wildfires, and a changing climate. The Nature Conservancy's Working Woodlands program helps landowners ensure their forests remain healthy, productive, and profitable for future generations. Joining us during this portion of the program is Josh Parrish. He is the Working Woodlands Program Director with the Nature Conservancy here in Pennsylvania. Josh Parrish, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Also, Secretary Dunn, Cindy Dunn of DCNR, stays with us today. Secretary Dunn, I'm not going to welcome you back. I'm just glad that you decided to stick around with us to talk about this.
Good.
If you would like to ask a question, make a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. So, Josh Parrish, what is Working Woodlands?
So Working Woodlands is a conservation program at the Nature Conservancy. Maybe back up just a little bit. The Nature Conservancy, founded in 1951, is in all 50 states and around 70 countries in the world. Much like the topic before me of protecting land and water through the Land and Water Conservation Fund, our mission is to protect the lands and waters on which all life depends. So with that mission in Pennsylvania, we have the Working Woodlands Program. That program works to enroll landowners really in three things. It helps them conserve their forest. So by conserving their forest, that means they're working with us to do what are called conservation easements. And that easement basically, the land stays in their hands. It's theirs to manage, to enjoy, but they're retiring things like their development rights. So they're keeping the forest in forest. The second piece is we're working with them to manage their forest, and that gets into the working part of the Working Woodlands, in a way that's sustainable for many values that they have for their forests. So for recreation, for wildlife habitat, for sustainable timber products revenues, and then the last piece for conserving their forests, so keeping their forest in forest, and for managing it in a way that is better than what we call common practice or the average, what happens, what we see out, you know, with forests in Pennsylvania. Just landowners are able to enroll in forest carbon programs with the Nature Conservancy.
I want to talk about that in just a moment, but I want to ask about something that, you know, in the language that you used, you said conserving forest. I use the word preserving. What's the difference?
So conserving forests is really looking at a forest, and it's not a forest that will never be entered or walked in or managed or a tree ever cut. It's looking at a forest and really from all the different lenses, I said, from wildlife, from water, from recreation. And once you balance all those things together, what you have is a conserved forest that is providing multiple benefits to nature, to people, over time. And it's sustaining that over time, much like the state forest in Pennsylvania. We're helping landowners with their lands essentially go through a planning process. They think through why they value the forest. You know, what do they want to see in 10 years and 20 years? And we help them then kind of think through and then plan out and carry out those goals and objectives.
From what I understand, and this may surprise some people, is that most forests in Pennsylvania are owned by private owners as opposed to, like, okay, the Allegheny National Forest, Michaux State Forest, you know, all those things that most forests, and maybe it's because we have this picture of in our mind of thousands of acres of forest, but is it accurate to say that the most forests are on private land?
So in Pennsylvania and in the eastern United States, roughly 70% of all forests are owned by private individuals. That's in Pennsylvania. It's about 12 million acres are owned by private individuals, and another 5 million are owned by public. So we have about 17 million acres of our 29 million acres. So this is Penn's Woods, getting back to William Penn, tying it back together again. You know, we're majority of forest again, 56% in Pennsylvania. And of that 56% of forests, 70% are owned by private individuals. And that's where the Nature Conservancy, you know, works to influence.
From what I understand, climate change is your number one priority, correct?
That's correct.
Why?
Well, I mean, because it's the biggest you know, issue facing really the planet right now. And the thing the Working Woodlands Program works to promote is we promote forestry and long-term management through our Working Woodlands Program that has climate benefits over time. So what we see, the scientists at the Nature Conservancy recently put out a publication that showed that natural climate solutions, so forests are inherently just set up to basically store carbon through photosynthesis. It's already there. We have the technology outside everywhere to mitigate climate and to do a better job managing forests and keeping forests in forests. So what we see is roughly 21% of the solution we need through 2030 to mitigate the effects of climate change, catastrophic effects, can be met in the U.S. and in Pennsylvania through managing forests in ways that are climate smart, which are also ways that over the long term will produce sustainable forest products, you know, recreation, wildlife habitat. And it's to get back to your cliches in the segment before, there's a lot of win-wins here, you know, healthy forests, healthy climate, you know, healthy people.
You're using the word carbon, and that is a big part of what this program is. Carbon credits, how does that, and again, I think that what many people picture when they hear that term is they're thinking about, I don't know, factories and, you know, carbon cap and trade, that kind of thing. How does it work when we're talking about this program?
So our program is predominantly based in what's called the voluntary carbon market. So that what that means is there's no law out there compelling a buyer of those credits. And the buyers are predominantly corporations, larger corporations right now. What it means is those corporations have a voluntary commitment to climate, to basically be leaders in the climate space. And what they will do is because we are influencing and having landowners enroll in our program and then produce voluntary forest carbon credits, they're investing in our projects because they have the climate benefits. They can make claims that their footprint is lower. I will say that that's part for corporations. That's one of the strategies they have. They, you know, energy efficiency, looking at renewable energy, and then, you know, offset. So this isn't just one piece of the, this isn't the only piece of their puzzle. This is a part of a package that gets them to a lower carbon, basically, future for their companies. And so this is voluntary purchases in Pennsylvania. So there's companies right now, Fortune 500 companies, investing money in Pennsylvania in private forests for us to basically keep the forest in forests, manage it in a way that long-term has climate, has economic, has ecological benefits. And then for them, what's in it for them is they are basically offsetting a part of their footprint and then can report to their stakeholders, to their investors, to their employees, and that's increasingly important as well, that they're basically a good steward mm-hmm. of the climate.
Secretary Dunn, so where does this come in the grand plan for Pennsylvania and the outdoors?
Well, it's interesting, you know, in our role at DCNR, people look at a state map and maybe think that our work is confined to those green spots on the map that are the public lands. But in fact, the mission of the Bureau of Forestry is all the forests of Pennsylvania, and we have jurisdictional, legal, constitutional responsibility for all the plants of Pennsylvania. We also, as I mentioned in the last segment, are we were called Forests and Waters. We have obligation to the waters of Pennsylvania. So we're viewing forest and forest management statewide. We launched a climate initiative last June that includes really expanding, you know, forest land cover in Pennsylvania. So the Nature Conservancy's work, as well as some of our other partners, is very critical. In terms of the use of forest easements, it's a tool that we're really starting to grasp and use in Pennsylvania. If you think about Penn's Woods, and you think about all the acres in Pennsylvania, and 56 of it currently being, percent of it being forested, we actually need to up that amount significantly. And we'll never be able to do that all by including it in the public land base.
How are you going to do that, though? I mean, realistically, as the population grows, as there's development across the state, that more houses pop up, more buildings. I mean, is it realistic to think that we can go beyond that 56%?
I think so. And here's why. I mean, I think tying the forest product industry and tying the corporate need for climate remediation in, I think we can. For one thing, if you think about like northwestern Pennsylvania, our hardwoods, you know, Pennsylvania hardwoods, the cherries and maples and oaks and such, are globally significant. And so the highest and best use of some of this land is regenerating forest. And so a forest easement program where big chunks of land are preserved and used in forestry is very critical. And the just like farmland preservation in Lancaster County, some of the best soils in the world are in Lancaster County. And they're part of the Agland Preservation, Farmland Preservation Program. So we're doing the same thing, the easement model for working forest land, and it expands and maintains the forest space. In terms of areas and acreage that's now not covered by forest, in the Chesapeake Bay effort, I'm working with Pat McDonald, Secretary of DEP, and Secretary Russell Redding from Ag. And we're creating a plan for the Susquehanna drainage, but we're viewing it as a statewide approach where we'll reforest those buffers along streams and find public dollars to help support everyone from farmers to corporate campuses to citizens to municipal parks to reforest especially that area along the streams. But just as importantly, headwater areas and that matrix in a watershed of land, we need to add forest cover back. And that's right down to the homeowner level. Yeah. And if you drive around, I've gotten to be a little obsessed with this. You know, I drive around in Pennsylvania and you see idle land that's just being mowed for lack of imagination for what else could happen there. We have programs. We have a community urban forestry program. We can really work with almost any community. We have our grants program that works in municipal parks. We can reforest and add trees to any municipal park. It's interesting, you know, just thinking about the municipal parks, the topic of the last segment on recreation, you see, what really cracks me up is you see like a municipal ball field with a couple of lollipop trees, and you see all those parents here watching the soccer game. like 20 parents will be gathered under one tree.
Right. Yeah, get some shade.
Yeah, so I mean, we have a lot of places in Pennsylvania we can add trees to, and it'll be good for water and good for climate.
I'm just trying to picture you. I only have about 3 minutes left, so I can't go too far with this, but I'm trying to picture you being obsessed with this and stopping, knocking on a landowner's door and saying, hey, you know, we could do something with this field.
Right.
We have a question here, Josh, from Kit, who asked, does the easements from the landowners open privately owned forest land to public use?
The answer there is no, it does not. So working forest conservation easements do not open lands up for like public recreation and things. We do have some easements that have that, but it's the landowner's discretion. The landowner has the private landowner has complete control essentially to manage, to dictate basically uses on their property.
Can I add something to that?
Sure.
So when we put public dollars in these easements, which we increasingly are, in fact, we just got a donated almost 10,000-acre easement up in northwest Pennsylvania, and we were able to support Nature Conservancy's work in the Duncannon Watershed, which is a phenomenal project. I hope we get to
it's on your website, by the way.
Yeah.
And yeah, that is a big project.
That's one that I hike on myself. My brother hunts on and gets a couple deer every year off of that. But anyway, that when there's public dollars going on, yes, there are is an access requirement, but the landowner starts a conversation with a group like Nature Conservancy. If they don't want to go with public access, then they don't. There's absolutely no need to. But if they go with public dollars, then of course the public expectation is they'll have access.
We get an email here from Julie, and this I think was meant for our last segment. I think, but we from what you explained about the corporate interest in this as well, I'll read it as she's written it, and then we can address it. She says, today shows an example of greenwashing. All this talk about our wonderful natural resources and green spaces, but funded by the fossil fuel extraction industry. Are you kidding me? The industry supports this fund because it gives the machine of acceptability. If we get rid of offshore drilling, what happens to this funding? All right, so that was going back to the Land and Water Conservation Fund. But I think, Josh, we also, if I can stretch that question out a little bit, you had mentioned about corporate, the corporate contributions to the Working Woodlands program as well. So I asked the question of both of you.
Well, that's Julie's perspective is one we do hear about. And so our funding sources come from oil and gas extraction, at least a couple of them. Keystone funds, from really transfer tax, environmental stewardship funds, from landfill tipping fees. I think the way I would look at it is, resource extraction is happening. Where I sit, I'm not in a position to change that. I would like to see those dollars, though, go back to meet the constitutional requirements DCNR has to assure, the public has access to the natural environment, has clean air, clean water, and nature.
Mm-hmm. Josh, what about what you had said about corporate interest in the forest?
Yeah, I mean, I think my response to that would be that corporations are doing this, voluntarily, and they don't have to put any dollars at all into our forest carbon projects, and they're basically choosing to invest in this in being part of a larger coalition for climate action across the U.S., across the world. So I think because it's part of that bigger mission with governments, with NGOs, with other corporations, they're leading by example. And there's a lot more to it than just, as I said, I wanted to make the point, it's not just forest carbon projects and they check the box that they're greener. They're doing all kinds of other things as well in their sustainability and programs around, energy efficiency, renewable energy. There's a you have to look at the whole package and not just one piece of it. And one piece of it is investing in natural systems like our forests.
We only have a minute left. I want to thank both of you for being on the program today. Josh, for those hearing this and are thinking, okay, I have some forested land, is there a minimum number of acres that they would have to have? And how can someone become eligible? What can they do to participate?
So, right now there is a minimum. It's around 1,500 acres, which we recognize is large. We're working right now with American Forest Foundation with what we're calling the Family Forest Carbon Program to take that down to 40, 30, 20 acres, but we're not there yet. I would say go to nature.org/Pennsylvania and check out our website. The contact information's there, and our main office is here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Josh Parrish is with the Working Woodlands Program. He's the program director of the Nature Conservancy here at Pennsylvania. Cindy Dunn, secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Conservation and Natural Resources. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up on tomorrow's program, again, we're going to be talking about William Penn, a biography of Pennsylvania's founder, as 1681, Charter Day, the first charter here in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania was chartered on this date, in 1681. So we'll be talking about William Penn. That comes up on tomorrow's program, so be sure to tune in. Have a good day. I'm Scott Lamar.